Today on the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards, we're going to be talking books. More specifically, we're going to be discussing the brand new novels by Jonathan Safran Foer and Emma McBride and an upcoming anthology of stories that look at what it means to be an immigrant in Britain. But before all that, let me introduce my guest on today's programme, author and book critic Cathy Rensenbrink. Cathy, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Good to have you with us, as always. Our first read today is a musing on what the true meaning of home is. Here I Am is the new novel by Jonathan Safran Foer, his first in 11 years, I think. Cathy, give us the plot of this story, first of all.
Well, that's a very good question to start off with, because I think it's a family novel. Really, it's about one small family and what happens when the parents get divorced. But there's also this other plot, which is that the world is possibly ending. I don't know why I'm laughing, because it's not funny in the novel.
Can that be a subplot? Not really.
Well,
tell us about the interweaving of these.
That's the interesting thing, because I think the bit he's interested in is the family stuff, and that's the bit that really works, the tiny domestic detail. And I felt that all the way through reading it, that was the... So although there's this big... So, you know, the first line is, when the destruction of Israel commenced. So there's this big political plot, because this earthquake has happened in Israel, and that it creates all sorts of mayhem, as you can imagine, as it would. But I think where his skills really lie as a novelist is in really capturing, pinning the details of the home.
So, well, let's talk a bit more then about that juxtaposition of this family narrative and this huge sweeping, you know, the huge drama that you're describing. How's that woven together? What does the actual structure of the piece look like? How does it read?
Well, it's the father, Jacob. He's a screenwriter and he's a dad. He's a screenwriter who is struggling to write anything, doesn't really like what he's writing. And of course, we do know that this is the first novel from Jonathan Safran Foer for 10 years. So you do feel that all the bits about not being able to write and worrying that what you're writing rubbish might be autobiographical in their source. And his wife, Jacob's wife, Julia, is an architect, but she's kind of a bit covered with motherhood. And their son, Sam, their eldest son, he's supposed to be about to have his bar mitzvah, but he's just done a very bad thing at school. So everybody's cross with Sam. That's the thing. And then the younger brothers, there's two smaller boys as well called Max and Benji. The writing about the children is just so spot on. I have a small boy. I've got a 7-year-old boy. And it just seemed to me that every single bit about boys and the nature of boys was just absolutely perfect. And also, I thought it was so good about the difficulties of marriage with children and the banality of having to keep everything going and the pressures that there are. And then fairly early on in the novel, Jacob has been having a sort of a sexless affair. He's been sexting with someone, but it's never actually become physical. It's a romance or a relationship or a liaison that's happening on his phone. And of course, Julia finds his phone and that kickstarts the whole terrible thing. And then relatives visit from Israel. It's extremely absorbing and very brilliant. It's very long. I got to the end thinking, there were various times when I thought, you know, is this a conceit too far? But I got to the end thinking, actually, I'm glad I read every single word of this. And it did also make me reflect that I would so much rather read a flawed work of genius by a genius, which I think he is, than read a, you know, competently put together, adequate, well-edited, shorter book.
I think a lot of people would go along with that. Just on that point, it is funny, you know, people, and I suppose critics like yourself, but people say, oh, you know, writers are at their best, or we like writers when they're writing about writing. And the same thing happens, I guess, on the Hollywood screen when directors make films about films. Is that a truism? I mean, do you think that he finds something, you mentioned those autobiographical allusions, is it, or will critics or readers always read that into a book that's been 10 years in the making?
Well, they probably will. It's so interesting, the writing thing. I've always loved books about writers before I ever thought I would be one, an official published one, because I always was one on the sly. And I must say, I like them even more now. I do often wonder how much people like, you know, how much non-writers like books about writers. And you do, as a writer, you know, all your plot lines basically involve a writer who kind of doesn't want to write that day, so sets out to do something else. So, of course, not all books can be just that. But I do think I think any hints at writing process or the nature of creative life are very interesting.
Well, I might be a student of that one because, as you said about, was it the banality of these relationships? I've got a much younger son. Mm-hmm. He's only one. So I'll read it as a primer of how not to do things, perhaps.
Yes.
And we'll leave anything about sexist relationships to one side. That's Here I Am by Jonathan Safran Foer, which is out now, published by Hamish Hamilton. Next up, the second title by Irish writer Emma McBride, The Lesser Bohemians, follows an 18-year-old girl who moves to London to attend drama school. She meets an older actor she falls in with, but unbeknown to her, he has a dark past. Kathy, it's interesting, we were just saying about Saffron Furr. McBride moved to London as a teenager to go to drama school. Are we in the same place of the sort of autobiographical fiction, or is this something rather different?
Well, it is interesting because I think probably it is. I started reading this, obviously having read her first book, A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing, which
was
huge.
Maybe we should talk about that because this had an extraordinary reaction. And again, I mean, one wonders about the pressure on the author having been, you know...
The second book
problem,
yes.
Yeah, burdened by that praise? Or would you say, I don't know, is it liberating to have to be so vindicated in your writerly pursuits? I don't know. What do you make of how this stands up, given that background?
Well, I mean, I just loved this. I loved her first book as well. And of course, she writes in such a distinctive style that when I first started reading this, I thought, is the voice going to be the same as A Girl in a Half-Formed Thing? Is it kind of a continuation of the character? But actually, even though the style initially feels familiar, the character is very different from the earlier book, only having in common, I think, being Irish and also being in some way damaged. But arguably, I mean, most people are a bit damaged, aren't they, in some way or another. There's such an energy and a beauty to this book. And what I think really marks it out is most novels write really badly about... I just don't think anyone writes well about sex. And this does. I think sometimes people write well about awful sex, but nobody... I think there's very, very little good writing about... sort of that passionate heat of... That's why there's the Bad Sex Awards
UK,
which of course...
There's always that award, which garners lots of publicity.
I tell you, they get lots of entrants because there's...
But is this book then a sort of a romantic piece? Is it a thriller? What I mean, I know a lot of people said, you know, it's very stylistically, it can be quite challenging. I mean, does she slightly defy easy labelling? Is
I
that
do
part
think,
of her appeal?
I think
perhaps?
It is, but I do think with this one and actually the first one, the style is only challenging. Certainly I only found it challenging for the first couple of pages. Once you've got the rhythms, you're off. And I think it is it's a love story, really. It's a dark love story. Both of the characters have pasts. So the older actor Stephen has a sort of a big chunky backstory in every possible way, and a lot of the book I think is the momentum towards, you know, because he doesn't expect that the relationship with her is going to turn into a relationship. He thinks it's just a sex thing, and then as that changes and as they start to share, and so it's about intimacy, it's about passion, it's about growing together, it's about having children, it's about being a child and being a parent, what you expect from your parents, how your parents should protect you, what happens when they don't. And it's just sort of endlessly fascinating. It is one of those books, I finished reading it and I just wanted to read it again. And I keep thinking about it because it keeps slightly echoing in my mind. And the scene setting's all done very well as well. It's nice reading about London and the sort of love affair happening in grimy London pubs when people could still smoke, of course. I was, I think, falling in love in London at that age, smoking fags in grimy London pubs. That's possibly another reason why I like it.
Well, it's certainly high praise, isn't it, when you have that feeling when you get to the final pages of a book that you sort of want to... You either wish that the book continued or you want to just go back and read it again. What about her sort of writerly mastery? You know, you talked about these characters who have things about themselves to reveal. How does she handle that? There's still the same flair for sort of revealing truths about her characters, which we would probably be familiar with from the first book.
Yeah, it's done very well and actually done very simply because, and I was thinking about it, it sounds a bit obvious, but that of course when a novel is about two people meeting each other and that couple finding out about each other, that's really how you do it as the reader. You find out, you know, so there's a whole chunk written kind of from Stephen's point of view, but it's the idea is that he's telling the story. He's finally telling his story to her, and that we as the reader are eavesdropping on what they choose to share about each other. So that's all extremely well done and very compelling. And you just, I did find myself really caring about this couple, you know, in quite a soppy way. Mm. I really wanted them to find a way through. And I think it's a hopeful book. It's disturbing in places. It's not, you know, they both are dealing with some pretty significant baggage, but I actually found it rather hopeful and lovely. And I think it reflects, because it's a nice pink cover with a rose on the front. Well, not a rose, I think. A peony.
Yeah, what is that? Is that kind of salmon?
It's a pretty cover. And halfway through, I was thinking, why did they put a pink flowery cover on this? But actually, by the end, I thought, you know what? I think its pink flowery cover is rather nice.
There we go. The pink cover is on The Lesser Bohemians by Emma McBride, which is out now, published by Faber and Faber. Finally, on today's programme, we have The Good Immigrant, edited by Nikesh Shukla. This anthology contains 21 black, Asian and minority ethnic voices from Britain exploring why immigrants come to the UK, what it's like to live in a country that, well, sometimes doesn't seem to want to accept you. Cathy, what sort of stories feature, and I wonder, any book covering this sort of subject matter, you know, it's an interesting time in Britain. Post-Brexit, we've seen, you know, attacks on migrants. We've seen language, I guess we probably thought had been parked firmly back in the 70s or earlier. Is it possible to read and enjoy this anthology without the kind of madness and mayhem of what we've been hearing and seeing in the political and social realm over the last few months?
I think it informs it, and obviously it's been long in the planning before Brexit, but it feels to me like a very timely book. I mean, probably very depressing that it is quite so timely. I think the story of how this book came about is very interesting. There is a new publishing model, a publisher called Unbound, and they crowdfund. So that's what happened with this book. Nikesh Shukla had the idea for it and then raised the fund so the book could come into being. And I think as I was reading it, I just felt this kind of, I felt rather exhilarated and excited that it had been able to come about, I think, in that way. And it just really is a very fascinating read. I learned all sorts of things I didn't really know before and saw things in a different way. Some of my favourites, some of my favourite essays, one from Verezzo about, she calls it A Guide to Being Black. And there's this line that I just thought was so powerful where she says, she's talking about how for mixed race children it can be confusing. She says, we don't always come out looking like our parents, and often we'll be racialized differently to them. The process can take a little longer to figure out. Because of this, I've spent the first decade of my life unaware that I was black, and spent the decade that followed being not very good at it. There is a theme that runs through these essays, not in all of them, but in a lot of them, where at some point the essay writer will say, I didn't think about the colour of my skin for the first X years of my life, and then suddenly I had to think about it. And I just thought that was, it's so interesting. And I think a lot about children and how, again, as the parent of a child, you gradually try to teach that child what they need to learn to navigate the world. But without, I quite often worry with my son, I've gone in a bit too hard, you know, when I see his poor little face crumple when I'm trying to explain something to him. And I've often thought that how would I feel if I was of a different ethnicity having to explain things to him? And so I felt this book gave me insights that I wouldn't otherwise have had. And lots of the pieces are really interesting and also often funny and very well written as well. Another one I particularly enjoyed was Riz Ahmed, who is an actor, and he talks about how what auditions and airports have in common, and that I just thought that was great. And again, he says, you see, the pitfalls of the audition room and the airport interrogation room are the same. They are places where the threat of rejection is real. They are also places where you're reduced to your marketability or threat level, where the length of your facial hair can be a deal breaker, where you are seen and hence you see yourselves in reductive labels. And I thought that was so interesting. Another cracking one by Musa Okwonga as well, who's a wonderful journalist. And I would read anything that man wrote. I just think he's so brilliant. But the title of the collection comes from him saying that there's this pressure to be grateful, that everybody wants immigrants to be good, that they're actually time wasters and scroungers until they manage to either win gold medals or win baking competitions, and then they become good immigrants. And this pressure, I did find it all fascinating. And so it's an interesting comparison point for me, apart from anything else, because my father is Irish. So, and I'm always very aware that as an immigrant's daughter, but as a white immigrant's daughter, I have an entirely different experience than I would do had my father been, say, Jamaican. It's just not, it's not comparable in any way. So I was pleased to learn, and I hope the book does really well because it's a beautiful thing. And I think Nikesh Shukla is a novelist, and I think some of the activism he's been doing has been really interesting, so more power to him.
Just a final thought on that, Catherine. Who's this book for? Because it strikes me as interesting. We talked about, you know, the white noise of, you know, the post-Brexit Britain and a lot of the challenges that these people, the writers in this book, have faced, often, you know, in a very immediate and quite shocking way in some cases. Who would be best served by reading this? Is it a book that actually, you know, it would be good if, I don't know, some members of our failing political classes read? Or is it for journalists? Is it a book that is going to be largely read by people maybe who are already alive to some of these themes? And, we're, you know, in a sense, it might be preaching to the choir. Who do you think would be best?
Well, it's a good thought. I think it's a book for everyone, really. I mean, I really I thought it was so interesting, the piece about, you know, being... Again, who you have around you to teach you how to be. I thought that was a really interesting idea. And I did think, I kind of thought, oh gosh, it'd be, if I was reading this and had a, you know, if I had a child, a mixed race child, but, you know, the father wasn't there with me, then reading these pieces would be really interesting and useful to me. But I mean, I hope everybody reads it. And there's lots of really good writing in it. And it's funny as well, which I feel I should point out. It's obviously yeah. often very serious and very important, but there are also moments of good humour in it.
A bit of levity, you need that.
Well, I actually do think it. I think in any kind of message, if you can bang in a couple of jokes, that's never a bad thing.
You're nearly there. the book is The Good Immigrant. It's edited by Nikesh Shukla. It's published later this month by Unbound. And that brings us to the end of today's programme. Thank you, Cathy Rensenbrink, for being with us, as always. This is the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Tom Edwards. Our producer was Holly Fisher, and our researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be discussing some Arab cinema. But for now, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.